Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, we're heading into the home stretch of the 2020 election, and as expected, North Carolina is at the center of a hotly contested battle for the presidency. While polls indicate that President Trump is all but certain to lose the national popular vote once again, there remains a chance that he could still prevail in the Electoral College if he wins in a handful of toss-up states like ours. Earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss this extraordinary situation and some of the factors that could ultimately drive the outcome with NC State University political science professor Stephen Green. As Green told me, the vast majority of Americans have had their minds made up about Trump for a long time, so the election is likely to hinge on turnout, a very small number of undecided voters, and perhaps even some issues that have yet to emerge. Well, Professor Stephen Green, welcome back to News and Views. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be back with you.
It's a remarkable time to be a political science professor in modern America. We are, I guess, in many ways, an unprecedented moment in United States history in terms of some of the issues that are coming forth in terms of the election, fundamental questions about the legitimacy of the election, and whether, in fact, there will be a peaceful transfer of power. What's your overall take on the state of things here as we are just about a month away from Election Day?
Yeah, no, it is obviously a pretty amazing time. And, you know, certainly my own expertise has long been in things like understanding public opinion and elections and looking at surveys of voters and whatnot. And honestly, have never had that much knowledge or in-depth study of the very nature of democratic elections, of the idea of peaceful transference of power and democratic legitimacy, and what do you do when one side says they're not necessarily going to trust the results, or that a very popular form of voting might actually be fraudulent despite all evidence. So it's kind of fascinating for me to now be learning from all my colleagues who have been studying democracy writ large and democracies in Eastern Europe and whatnot, when I never really thought that was relevant to my studies of American democracy, and I could just look at voter surveys and things like that and not have to worry about the baseline condition of democracy. So that the fact that we are there is, it is many things.
It's disturbing, but it's, you know, we I guess we hope it's a blip. We hope that it's a moment in history that doesn't get repeated, that people
absolutely
retain their basic faith in elections, which by and large, frankly, seem to be in many ways more honest than they've ever been. There seems to be more transparency when it comes to how we vote. I certainly am old enough to remember the days of Richard Daley and Lyndon Johnson's, you know, stealing elections and stuffing ballot boxes in American history. And frankly, that kind of rank corruption seems to be less prevalent in modern America than it was 50 or 100 years ago.
That's absolutely a great irony in that we really do have very free, very fair elections, much more so than historically speaking in many cases. And we responded appropriately to a lot of the historical corruption and shenanigans by, you know, really instituting systems to make sure elections are free and fair, such that what happened in North Carolina's 8th district recently really is the anomaly and not something that's regularly happening. Right. And then again, we put things in place to make that rare.
It seems that's the case, and we retain our hope that that will continue to be the case going forward. You talked about, of course, you pay attention to what people think. You pay attention to polling and the issues that motivate voters. And in many respects, you told me before we went on the air, a pretty stable electorate that's confronting the 2020 election in many respects. In a lot of ways, things haven't changed a lot over the last few years, and certainly not over the last few months.
No, absolutely. You know, in large part, political science tells us that presidential elections with an incumbent are largely a referendum on the incumbent. And Donald Trump is an incumbent president who has had, I will say, historically stable opinions about him, both the liking and the disliking, that have really varied in a very narrow range over time. And again, that the vast majority of people have their minds made up about him. And again, even more so, I think, than a typical incumbent president. So there's just not a lot of room for movement. I mean, there may be a question of who's actually going to come out and vote on Election Day and who's not. But again, very few people, I think, are ultimately going to be persuaded by this campaign who would have voted for Donald Trump and then will not, or vice versa.
Of course, in 2016, President Trump actually lost the popular vote by a significant margin. But because of the way the Electoral College broke down, or broke out, he succeeded in winning the presidency. And one presumes that that is at the heart of why we're having such a passionate contest right now, is the fact that it's really a battle over a handful of votes in a handful of states that will likely determine the outcome.
Yes, absolutely. And again, it's interesting to take a step back for just a minute and think about the nature of democracy. And, you know, these absolutely are the rules, and that's what we, you need to go by your rules. But we need to think about the nature of our rules when, if this was an election determined by a national popular vote, as happens in pretty much every other democracy, we would be having a very different conversation.
Yeah.
We would be talking about Joe Biden clearly cruising to victory. Basically, we have a situation where virtually everybody, including, I think, Donald Trump's advisors, think he is going to lose the national popular vote, mm-hmm. but that most people think that Joe Biden needs to win by at least 3% to actually have a good shot at winning the Electoral College or to have a 50-50 shot, which is kind of crazy on its face.
Yeah.
And then again, for us, means we are paying attention to just a handful of states, which, great for us, includes ours, but not great for the country as a whole, because the vast majority of the American public is kind of almost not part of the presidential election.
Yeah. President Trump has been to North Carolina, I think, 5 times in the last few weeks. There are obviously the vast majority of states he has not visited and will not visit prior to the election. You know, we know for a fact that North Carolina really is, it would appear, according to the polls, up in the air, a true swing state, a true state in which it's too close to call. What are some of the factors that could ultimately decide which way North Carolina goes? I know we've got a Supreme Court fight. We've got lots of other issues that have emerged in the recent days. And of course, we've got the overarching elephant in the room of the pandemic. Talk to us about what are some of the things that are likely to swing
right.
the way the vote goes in North Carolina?
You know, there are still some undecided voters. And in a state as close as North Carolina, enough that they certainly could change the results of the election here. We can certainly imagine things happening. We've got 3 presidential debates coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That news made in those debates, the way that might change the tenor of the campaign, the tenor of coverage, the way this pandemic continues to unfold. If it seems that things get markedly better or markedly worse, that likewise could affect things. I think it's probably, shall we say, too late for major changes in the economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, people always talk about October surprises. So there rarely are any, honestly. But again, a state as close as North Carolina, one can imagine fairly small changes in the nature of the campaign being enough to tip us one way or the other.
In 1980, Ronald Reagan famously helped swing the election against incumbent Jimmy Carter his way by looking in the camera at the end of the debate, one of the debates, and I think maybe there was only one debate, and saying, ask yourself, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? One presumes that Joe Biden will make some similar appeal to the American public. Take a look at where we are, where things were 4 years ago and where they are now. And I guess President Trump's response is law and order. Is that the argument that he's responding with?
I mean, yeah, again, he's got a tough job as an incumbent in a pandemic that's killed hundreds of thousands of Americans and with an economy that's clearly suffering from that pandemic. Again, you know, he has done his best to try and deflect blame from himself and his leadership on that. But, you know, in the end, you are always looking at more than anything, a referendum on the incumbent. And so his argument is, well, yes, law and order, it will be worse with Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And that is his argument. And obviously his supporters and maybe even, you know, some swing voters do buy that argument. But it is a tougher argument to make for an incumbent to say, well, things could be worse, rather than, you know, taking on an incumbent and saying something like, are you better off?
Mm-hmm.
And when many people are not.
Is there any likelihood that this Supreme Court fight that we're in the midst of now, this unprecedented court fight, we've never had one this late in a presidential election year, the latest a Supreme Court justice has ever been confirmed was July, and now here we're looking at confirming a justice maybe just days before the election. Is that just a distraction, one that most voters probably won't pay that much attention to, or could it make a difference, for instance, with suburban women voters who maybe voted for Trump in 2016 and are concerned about the losing the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the equality issues she championed?
Yeah, that's a tough one, honestly. I mean, I think it's going to have a very marginal impact. But you know, it's possible that some states are decided by very close margins. That's what happened in 2016. So, you know, if things are very close, you could definitely point to a fight over the Supreme Court, especially perhaps energizing pro-choice women to vote. You could argue that it's energizing a pro-life base. But again, I think it's harder to make that case. I think the polling shows that that case is harder. I think if the Supreme Court does have any impact on the election, it will probably, to a modest degree, help Joe Biden and Democratic candidates. But I think overall, again, the types of people who pay attention to the Supreme Court, I think have in large part already made up their minds.
We're coming to the end of our time with Professor Stephen Green of North Carolina State University Political Science Department. But I want to ask about we've talked a lot about the national election. Obviously, North Carolina, it's a tremendously important election as well. We've got virtually every race in the state is up except for one U.S. Senate seat. But is the Trump factor, the dominance of this national conflict that we've had, is that coloring every race? Should we expect that that's going to influence every race? It seems in many ways.
Every race. And, you know, in my classes, we talk about the nationalization of politics. And it's a shame, honestly, because many of the issues that our legislature is facing, things that our council of state that they will face in their jobs, have really nothing to do with Donald Trump. But, you know, the vast majority of people are going to be motivated to turn out based on the Trump and Biden race and vote for Democrats and Republicans based on that. And there'll be some small variations. But, you know, what is determining the votes of your typical state legislator or the superintendent of public instruction really should be different from what you're thinking about with Trump versus Biden. But the reality is you're just going to have the vast majority of people come out and go all in on Republicans or all in on Democrats.
Yeah, even though we've had the demise of straight ticket voting in North Carolina a few years ago, it does seem that many people will head in that direction. Any final predictions on the kind of turnout we're likely to see? Is there any way to forecast what will happen in this extraordinary circumstance with so many people voting by mail and the pandemic keeping presumably some people home from actually going to the polls on election day?
I could be wrong. Well, because heck, I'm wrong all the time. But I really do think we'll see historically high turnout because in North Carolina, fortunately, we have laws in place that really do help make it easy to vote and that we have a great vote-by-mail system that is fair and accurate and tracked. And one of my children has already actually had his vote accounted for by this. So, you know, anybody who's afraid of the pandemic in North Carolina has a great vote-by-mail system that we can rely on. Whereas in other states, for example, Texas, that's not even a legitimate excuse to get a mail ballot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we'll see some real national variation on this, but I expect to see very high turnout in North Carolina.
Well, we'll hope that that's the case. We'll all be watching very carefully. I know you will as well. And I presume sometime after the election, assuming that the country is still standing, we'll get back together to talk about some of the results. Professor Stephen Green, thank you so much for being with us. If folks want to check out your work online, they can go to NC State website. Are there places that you would send people to check out your online thoughts and communications?
I like to brag that I am the number one Google hit for my name, just as long as you spell it right, Stephen with a V, Green with an E.
Do check him out online, folks. Thank you, Professor. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks.
Coming up next, how does the national eviction moratorium work, and is it doing any good? We'll hear from one of our state's top experts